I'm Angela Walsh, and this podcast is called The Downhill Slide. It's about being over 50. It's about memories, mentors, food. It's about love, loss, and dreams, old and new. Under 50 need not apply, but we're going to chat to somebody who's over 50 now. It's beautiful Barb, who's waiting patiently. Hello.
Hi, Ange. How are you?
Now, there's a reason I call you beautiful Barb is because you have such a positive outlook on life, and you always have such a beautiful nature. And were you always that way, Barb? Do you think you always looked on the sunny side of life, or is this something that you acquired as you grew older?
That's a good question. It's interesting to hear that that's how you see me. Sometimes, you know, when I'm curled up in the shower having a bit of a cry in the morning, that's not so positive, but that's a release, you know, that's a little pressure valve. But as a child, I think I was brought up in a fairly stoic family. You just got on with things. And my grandparents on my mother's side were always very positive and happy and musical. And always, whenever you were around them, whenever we went up there for a Sunday lunch, for example, it was always fun. And there was a lot of positivity about them, and I think that rubbed off, because you know how grandparents and grandchildren adore each other because they have a common enemy.
The one in between.
Yeah, the parent. But, yeah, so that was good, you know, and I spent all my holidays with my grandparents on a farm, on a dairy farm. And dairy and sheep they had at one stage. And it was fantastic life. And I think you just got on with things. You didn't dwell over anything negative, you know.
When you talk about your Sunday lunches that you had there, what kind of food did you eat for Sunday lunch?
Oh, the smells. Nana had an old wooden stove. She would make the most amazing meals. It was always a Sunday roast, and it was always lamb because they had their own, so they'd kill them. And they'd have a lamb carcass hanging up in the cool room, and that would be our Sunday roast. And normally some sort of steamed pudding, you know, jam in the bottom and sort of a spongy, cakey mix. And you turn it upside down and the jam would run all over us, and serve that with cream and ice cream. It was delicious. But Nana would also make her own chocolate. I can remember that happening. And she occasionally she'd have the neighbours or some people in, and they'd open up the front room, you know, the good room. And she'd have a tea trolley, a lovely wooden one, Jacobean, you know, with that barley twist legs and things, and she'd wheel that into the lounge room, and she'd have a sponge cake. Oh, it was lovely, and a lemon slice that she used to make, and we'd get out the good china. It'd be lovely.
Playing ladies.
Yes, and they were, Nan and Pap was the name that I called my grandfather. Nana would play the organ in the local church and Pap would sing. So if people came over, they used to have a little sing song in the afternoon. So that was always fun. And then Pap would have to excuse himself and head off and do the milking. But, fond memories. And they were sort of under 10 years of age, those memories. They stick. What was that saying? Give me a person until they're 7 years of age and I have them for life. The memories from there must have been helped form my thinking and my demeanour.
Well, you're not a vegetarian, so obviously killing the sheep once a week didn't bother you.
No, that was just part of the course when you're on the land. And I remember being very annoyed when my favourite cow was sold off because she came in late. That meant she was late becoming pregnant, And so she was going to have a calf late in the season, so it was no longer economical for her. Her name was Rock and Roll because she used to rock and roll in the bale when she was being milked. She'd change from one foot to the other. And I thought she was a fantastic cow. I really liked her. And I was really miffed when they sold her.
I suppose that's the difference. If you're growing up on the land, you learn about the practicalities of life and life and death.
That's right. I think so. It's it's very down to earth.
And so that cow that was rocking and rolling, do you think we get like that as we turn 50 and there's that, it's that middle time, and then after that people just seem to think you're quirky if you do something in particular, or, you know, you're getting too old to be considered worthy of anything?
Quite often. Look, I've noticed that it is improving over the years. There are a lot of women in their 50s who are doing some great things. I mean, some of the musicians, you know, the Madonnas and the Shares, and some of the actresses, they're doing wonderful things as they age. And they're very powerful. Look at Oprah, for example. She really got her straps when she was in her 50s, didn't she? She found her straps and she was topping everything. And she's made a fortune out of doing what she loves. I think maybe that's the clue when you're powerful enough to be able to do that.
Well, I don't think age... We should be defining ourselves by age. I think it's ridiculous, true, actually. But we're so often blocked into that because of society, because of the way the government has things set up. All of a sudden you're at this age and then this age and then this age, and this is what you're supposed to do.
Yes, that's true. There's a very old conventional system. 50, you're supposed to be slowing down and out of the workforce. Letting the young people come through. They seem to think that there's no more, the general consensus perhaps is that there's no more creativity left for the older people.
Well, that's a load of rubbish.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also the technology thing these days too. They imagine that we're not able to keep up with technology. Well, some can, and some are just not interested enough to be bothered. So it shouldn't be a problem, really. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter what age you are. Get out there and do what you can.
I remember when I was about 9 years old, there was a group of us sitting there talking and just looking around and saying, okay, how old do you want to be when you die? And I said, I reckon, you know, 60 is really, really old. I think that's probably enough, you know. And that's when I'm like 9 years old. And you think at that age you were looking at somebody who was in their 50s and they were all white-haired or grey and retired and all that
kind of
thing. And that's just – it's just not the way it is anymore. I mean, I for one know that I'll probably never, ever retire. It just won't happen, because you have to earn a living, you have to pay your bills, and you just have to keep going. And getting back to your grandparents, they would have been working. You said your grandfather had to go out and milk the cows. How long did they keep going?
Oh, gosh. I think they left the farm when my grandfather was in his 70s. My grandmother had died in her late 60s, third heart attack. You know, I can remember her slicing butter on her niece biscuits like it was cheese. So she had a serious heart cholesterol clog problem, and she died of a heart attack in her late 60s. My grandfather was in his 70s, and he moved up to Queensland then and left the farm to his son, my uncle, and who ran it from there. So. But he was still active, you know. He was painting houses and doing all sorts of things in those days. I mean, look at the Rolling Stones, for heaven's sake.
Exactly. So why do we have this perception that once you're over 50, once the grey starts to show, why are we Why do we have this perception that then, well, you're old now?
Yes, it's come from a time past, hasn't it? That's where it's come from. I don't think it applies so much these days. It shouldn't anyway. Obviously, some people still think that way. But honestly, sometimes when you look at women in their 50s and you look at a woman in her 30s, there's very little difference sometimes in appearance depending on what work's been done in the 50-year-old case.
The ovaries are a bit smaller, Barb.
That's right. But they're still rattling.
So tell me, what was the biggest dream you had when you were in your 30s? You know, what was the grand design?
Oh,
or the grand plan, I should say.
Oh, I just wanted to be in love. And happy and doing something useful that contributes to society. I wanted to volunteer. I would love to have worked overseas, which I did when I was in my 60s. I did that for 12 months. So finally I realized that dream, but it took a long time. But in my 30s, I wanted pretty much what most people want as a basic, I think, you know, to be loved and to love, to be useful, food and shelter. So that's the sort of thing that you need. I wanted to travel as well. I didn't travel when I was younger. So that part of my life was missing until I was older.
So did you manage to achieve that, Barb?
Yes. Well, I married when I was 50 and I was I married a Qantas pilot, and so that allowed plenty of travel, although there wasn't much in the way of seeing much when you went to these places. It was land somewhere, recover, have 24 hours there, and gear up for the flight back. So, but at least it got me out and about. And then when there were holidays, we were able to travel all over the world, which was just sensational. And someone who knew how to do it too. I was always a bit frightened to go overseas by myself. My cousin did it, no problems. Lots of people did it in the early 70s when my contemporaries were in their early 20s. Traveled by themselves. A lot of them took a boat, a six-week ship over to London. Carnaby Street was all the rage. Everything was happening in those days. And they worked over there and traveled. I didn't do all that. I was always thought that I would have a partner who would go with me, but I never found that person until late in life. But when I did, yes, I just loved it. Travel was so exciting. And of course, now the tables have turned with this pandemic. I can't see myself traveling overseas again for a long time.
With regards to the pandemic and people traveling now, do you think it'll ever be like it was?
Not for me, no. Because as you age, health becomes a bit of a problem. So I'm one of those people with comorbidities now. So that means I'm quite susceptible to illness with an autoimmune problem, which is genetic. So not much I can do about it really. But so I need to protect myself a little bit. So it's time possibly at this stage in life to tour around Australia. I always thought travel when you're younger and then see Australia when you're older. So that's how it's worked out for me.
Well, that's not a bad thing anyway, going to see your own backyard. And at least you, if you are somebody who suffers from any illness, you've got, you're at home, so to speak. So
exactly.
You can at least access help. But do you fear for the younger generations and the world is going to be very different?
Well, they seem to be coping very well. with changes. I mean, look at the students who've done their HSC this past year. Wow, how strong are they? They've been disrupted. They've had homeschooling. One minute they're at school, the next minute they're locked down with homeschooling. Their results have been tested in a different way. They haven't been able to, you know what I mean by that? They've sort of added increments and things to the areas where they couldn't actually be at school learning. So mm-hmm. they've made a general assessment for them, which in some cases works out well, in other cases doesn't so much. But how strong are they? And I do worry for some that have, with the short attention span syndrome, I wonder about that coming through too. But surely they'll look to their older brothers and sisters and see how they had to knuckle down and get through. So maybe that will rub off in some ways. Oversensitivity, perhaps. People taking exception. What was the old saying we used to have? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Yeah.
Something That's like that. Yeah, we used to just brush that off. These days, the doors are being opened to take enormous offence at the slightest thing. And I think that's a backward step, in my opinion.
So you're talking about being overly politically correct?
Possibly. And I could get into the politics here. But I better not, I suppose, with certain countries that are oversensitive. I think they're just playing politics too, I suppose. But some of the dreadful things that are going on social media with name-calling and what do they call it when they follow them all the time?
Trolling.
The trolling. I think that's just awful. And I feel that falls fairly squarely in the laps of the people that are running these social media outlets. They need to rein it in and have people removed from access constantly. They need to improve that area. And, some leadership examples. For a certain orange person, with his form of debating is to just talk over the opponent. How awful is that? Plus his insulting, dreadful mannerisms with his Twitters, with his tweets. That's no example to set for people. That's the haters, isn't it? That's that coming into our life, and it shouldn't be there. No. Should not be there.
No, I agree. It's a real shame.
It is.
Respect is key, I think. And do you recall, as like a young person, as in your teenage years, having experienced as much of this kind of bullying that goes on now?
No, I never saw any bullying. Really, that's just my white privileged sheltered upbringing, possibly, but. I remember seeing a sort of a fight in the school ground one day, and me being this, you know, let's go to the rescue type of person, I barged in and said, hey, be nice, you know, don't do this. And they said, oh, it's all right, we're just playing. So, so what I thought was someone being physically assaulting another person was just a couple of people having a bit of fun. So so I never saw any of that. There was one girl, she had a skin problem. She had psoriasis, I think it would have been when I look back. And she was ostracized a little bit. But I don't know, I always invited her in to our groups. She was quiet. I think she partly ostracized herself. You know, she withdrew because she was a little bit embarrassed about her skin. But we just, my friends and I just called her in to various games of basketball or skippy or whatever it was that was going on. And, yeah, so I didn't see it. I can't say that I saw it. I don't doubt that it went on, but I can't say that I saw it myself.
What kind of school did you go to? Was it a multicultural school?
Well, it was in Melbourne. It was very white Anglo-Saxon Protestant type of school. I can remember one girl, two sisters. Their parents were divorced, and I didn't know anybody else in the whole school. There must have been 500 students, I suppose. No one else in the school I knew whose parents were divorced. And I didn't know, there was one fellow that was of Spanish heritage and a couple of Greek heritage, but that's all I knew. I can't say that there was much diversification at all.
Do you welcome that now, Barb?
In what way?
Do you think it's a better thing that we recognise how many different cultures are here in Australia?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Because when I was at school, there was a lot of European migration, and Melbourne had a lot of Greek people. I think Melbourne's has the highest Greek population, the third highest Greek population outside of Athens or something like that. And we welcomed it. They still suffered a little bit in the workplace, I believe, derogatory terms. But they soon took a hold of it and turned it round and fit it in. It was terrific. But certainly by the time I'd left school when I was doing first year university, it was in the 70s, and that's when the boat people from Asia started to come. I think it was Vietnam. So we didn't have much in the way of Asian migration. We had a Chinese section in town. There was always a Chinatown in the big cities. But that they had sort of come through from the gold rush days, really. There was always that percentage there, but there was never a huge influx. And I've been back to Melbourne since, and there's a huge Asian population now. And thank goodness there is. It's done wonders for our lifestyle in many ways, and there's other problems too. A lot of problems culturally with their lifestyle in some ways, I think, which people of my upbringing possibly find hard to accept, but when we do, I think Australians are quite funny. My father was a perfect example. He might belittle the migration program and say, you know, keep Australia for the Australians, all this sort of stuff, but you're still here today. And then, but he'd be, the fellow next door came from Germany, he was his best mate. Mm. So when they actually know people from the other cultures, when they take the time to know them, they find that there's not that much difference at all, really.
And of course there's not. And what about, were there any Indigenous students at your school or at your university?
No, I didn't see any. Monash, I can't remember. There must have been somewhere, but I didn't see them. I can't remember.
Looks like we're changing the national anthem to say we are one and free instead of young and free. Mm. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think that's fantastic. Should have been done ages ago. Yeah, we should be celebrating that ancient culture. We're one of the ancient, most ancient cultures in the world. Mm. Our cave drawings surpass those of in France, in the caves there that are so celebrated historically. Our cave drawings are some tens of thousands of years older than that. And how wonderful. We should be promoting that and showing and using, introducing that type of learning and culture and history into our lives.
And protecting it, saving it from being blown up by Absolutely. Random businesses.
Wasn't that appalling? What a criminal act. What a dreadful act.
And it's happened way too many times that sacred places have been destroyed because of the lack of knowledge. So we need to increase that knowledge. But we all need to, I guess, feel that way about embracing Indigenous Australians and Indigenous Australian culture.
So, that's right.
So another question for you, Barb, with regards to looking back at your life and now where you are. Now, how do you feel about yourself as a person and what you've achieved in your life?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I've achieved very much. I've dabbled. There was a book called, what was it, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance a long time ago. And I think that book, if I remember correctly, that book celebrated dabbling in various areas. You don't have to choose one path and roar through and be successful in that. But there was merit in just going so far in one area and then trying something new and going so far in that. And I think that's my life. Lots of dabbling here, there and everywhere.
But that is success, Barb, travelling life and...
It gives you a broader mind. I can see the narrowness of some people my age who haven't done so many things. They their world is a lot smaller than mine, and it leads to so much understanding when you try a whole lot of different things. it's terrific. Yeah, I can recommend it. But we need to have those people that are singularly focused too so that we can have successes in various areas. Now, I remember at one stage there were all these motivational classes and things going on at some particular stage. I think it was in the early 80s. And I remember attending one. And when you're singularly focused, your mind can't think outside that focus. And they were trying to figure out how to curve a windscreen on a car. And they had to get away from the engineers and find the artists and find out how they curved their glass and then brought it back to meld it with the engineering side so that they could get the curved glass, curved windscreen in a car. So they had to think outside their own area to make things happen, and I think that can only be beneficial.
And that's also embracing other people's ideas and other people's perceptions of the way things are.
Mm.
So what about your future, Barb? What do you want out of your life?
Oh, I'd like to be useful. I'm a bit hamstruck by it or tied up with this illness at the moment. So I need to somehow or other find a way out of that. I've started volunteering again in aged care. I just love that. It's so good. All I do is go in and talk to some of the residents. And that can be so valuable. A lot of the residents may not see their family. Their family may live interstate. They're lonely. And if you go in there and just sit down and have a chat with them, I would really encourage people to volunteer. I think there's a lot of things we can do as we mature. We can help out, because we should be, if things work out normally, we're a little bit more financially stable as we age, and we have the time available to us to go and help others. So doing some volunteering is terrific. Getting into some exercise is fantastic as well. And we can also be warriors. We can get out there and protest and change things, or help to change things, because when you're younger and you have to support a family, you don't want to lose your job. It's so difficult these days, especially with the economic consequences of the pandemic. Trying to find a job is going to be very difficult, and also trying to be paid what you're worth in that job is another item altogether. But so you don't want to do anything to risk that. So you're not possibly you're not prepared to take a stand. But when you're older, it doesn't matter if you lose a job, because you're on the verge of retirement anyway. Get out there and make a noise. And if you have retired, that's the time to get out there and protest as well. Plus, you're also not so frightened of people in authority, I think. That's another thing. You can see where they're coming from a little more clearly because of all the experience you've had over the years. And so what would I want for the rest of my life? I want to be useful. I'd like to help with change. I'd like to be healthy. I'm very lucky to be loved and to love myself. Love other people is what I mean. So that's a blessing in my life. I'd like to continue along those lines. As long as I feel useful, if you're not useful, I can't see much point. And you do, if you volunteer, you certainly are of a lot of use to the community.
Barb, thank you so much for sharing all of that today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure, just a pleasure.
It was great to catch up with Barb, have a bit of a chat. She is one of the most positive people I know, has a great outlook on life, and yet she is quite unwell, faces pain every day. Doesn't stop that smile on her face, though. It's fantastic. Angus Murray, he's a great performer, and here's a song by him called My Car Broke Down, Could I Use Yours? You can see and hear more about Angus Murray at angusmurray.com.au. He's also on Facebook. Hope you like it. Thanks for listening.